Today's August 21st. August is evaporating rapidly because of the sweltering heat outside.
My lawn is dying. It's in bad shape.
We've entered old age because we're worried about such things. The weather and our lawns.
On some level, I'm super excited about not having to cut it. But I know the long-term damage is not worth this slight reprieve. And yet, here we are.
Maybe the groundhogs will die now because there's nothing to eat.
That would be great. The moles.
Moles.
Yeah, that would be good. Well, we all know about the adpocalypse, right? And YouTube has only spiraled further from that day. It's getting worse and worse for YouTube creators in a variety of ways.
Thank God for our Patreon.
It certainly is. And it seems that, you know, what we've learned about YouTube, which was that the advertisers are firmly in control. And they're not just controlling, you know, the policies and stuff. They're literally dictating what content can be shown and what must be buried by the algorithm. But perhaps it's not just YouTube. It seems like we've entered into a world where the advertisers control literally everything.
The Wall Street Journal has this article about words that I'm not going to read because of the algorithm. Advertisers blacklist news stories online, and they have some examples, and I think you can imagine what they are.
Now, one they left out here, and I will say it because we're probably doomed anyway. Oh, no, they did put it. They put it in the word cloud over there. Trump. So,
as in Trump card.
You can't argue that he is,
polarizing?
Incendiary. Yeah. And he could cause some people to have a terrible association. Now, personally, for me, I've always had this feeling of like, if I see an ad for your product, I lose a little bit of respect for your product, right? Like, don't show me. I don't want to see that. You're putting commercials on my television? So I never thought of it like, oh, you're paying for the program that I like. I was always just like, you're interrupting me. I hate you. But, people apparently associate whatever they're reading with. And, you know, on one hand, you're like, man, people aren't that dumb. But then you think about it and you're like, people are stupid.
Was the coffee cup on Game of Thrones product placement or accidental?
I think that was just, you know, that was a group of people who didn't care anymore.
On the plus side, or on the, like, switching gears a little bit, I wish Krista were here because I think that's a very clever stock photo.
It is nice, isn't it?
Or not stock photo, but like article photo or whatever. Because yeah, it's just like, you know, drops of soap on oil.
And it does show that those words will pop out
yeah.
to a lot of people. Now, the idea here, again, this is not just online. I imagine, of course, print is dead, so it's mostly online. But these advertisers saying, hey, we want to advertise with you, but never, ever run our ads on a headline that contains these words. Perhaps even the entire article. Which is weird because, like, shooting? What if it's a photography magazine? But it's not unique to, you know, the social media and YouTubes of the world. It's everywhere. And when the people who are presenting the news have to start thinking about what news they present because some of it won't make money, that's a scary world.
Well, I mean, what we do is, like, you know, we will have people on Patreon pay, which is good. But also we have other content that we do that is perfectly safe content, which will fund the other content. And I guess that's what Wall Street Journal and other things like that do, is like they'll take advertiser income and they'll have advertiser stuff somewhere else, but they still have like the journalistic stuff.
But they point out that when you have content that makes money and content that doesn't, then you're going to naturally morph into like human interest fluff.
Yeah.
And if you look at local news, that's what it's become. I mean, they'll read their Reuters and AP headlines, but then they'll go right to the feel-good stuff and the local stuff and the sports.
Miss Emma May, whatever, is 86 years old today.
86 years young. It's always 86 years young. So, yeah, terrifying world where the news itself is not fit to print, not because it's not true or it's fake news or whatever. It's just because the advertisers can't allow it. The gatekeepers.
Speaking of gatekeeping.
Yeah, it's literal gatekeeping. Disney. Now, we talked about Disney's new Disney Plus, and they have this bundle that they're putting out. What was it, $12?
Yeah.
I think it was $12. So you get Disney Plus, Hulu, and ESPN Plus. And it turns out that Spectrum is also going to offer that bundle for Disney through the Spectrum service. So if you have, like, I like my cable, I don't want to get this streaming crap, well, you can just get this through Spectrum. And now those evil giants have teamed up to do something else.
Disney fights streaming account sharing with help from the cable industry. This deal with Charter aims to stop account sharing on Disney Plus, Hulu, and ESPN Plus. So if you're a media company and somebody is sharing your account, it's like, I don't know if this is the same person or not. Maybe, you know, the wireless comes from a different IP versus their other stuff. Well, if the ISP cooperates to see inside your network, they can be like, oh, no, this is two different people. We can tell.
But if you're on mobile data, that ain't going to work. And if you're traveling, let's say you're in a hotel and you've got your tablet or your laptop. I think they did not say how they're going to do this. I think it's going to be two-factor.
Yeah.
And that's going to be super, super annoying. It annoys me to no end when I have to two-factor into my bank account. But I understand.
But I'm willing to tolerate that for a bank account, right, but not for Hulu.
If I have to two-factor in to watch TV, I don't like that at all. I don't know if I would do that. Of course, I wouldn't have this service in the first place, but still. It's going to be interesting to see what they do there when they do announce it.
Oh, this article is long.
And it's once again, you know, I hate to get on the bandwagon of, like, you know, we got to destroy these big companies. You know, we got to regulate. But this is some crap that Amazon is doing. I mean, the review seating,
yeah,
that annoys me a lot. Because, like, you guys know what's happening here. And you're letting it happen because it sells products. And then, I didn't include the story. Did you see the social media thing?
Mm-hmm.
In there?
Yeah, the bathroom breaks. Some of those tweets are amazing. We'll talk about it.
Was the story in there?
No, I didn't see it. I was going to add it, but then we'll talk about it on this one. DigiDay has the headline, Amazon offered vendors Amazon's Choice labels in return for ad spending and lower prices. So this article is very well documented. It talks about some specific cases where they ask a vendor to lower the prices on a particular product by like $30. And it's like, hey, if you want to, you know, buy more ads, we'll do this. It was almost, but not quite, a pay-to-play system. And they were like, oh, we're getting dangerously close to, like, pay-to-play here. So let's make some minor changes to it. So it was only basically pay-to-play for a little while, and then they fixed it. But it's still rigged, basically. So you have to buy ad spots, and then Amazon says it's Amazon's choice. But you also have to maintain, like, 4-star rating and some other stuff that's genuinely maybe pretty good. But it's also kind of anti-competitive.
There was also some mention of, like, maybe, hey, we don't like that you also distribute with Walmart.
Yeah.
You want to be Amazon's choice? You better not be at Walmart. No. And that was the Walmart business model. Yeah. Of, like, they would come to you and they'd be like, listen, your margin is $3, right? Well, your margin's going to be 30 cents with us, but you're going to be in a billion stores. So you're going to make it back. You call the warehouse and tell them to double the shifts.
I like how they did it with Bose. Like, they literally just went to Bose and were like, you're not even going to make your own products. We're going to make your products, and it's going to be to our specs, not yours. And it's going to be called Bose, and you're going to be okay with it. And Bose is like, oh, okay.
So Amazon has that kind of power. And if you're Amazon's choice, I mean, you think about it, you search for something. It's the first one that pops up. It has good reviews. You don't really want to think about it. And you're like, okay, if Amazon thinks I should get this one, why shouldn't I get this one? I bet Alexa automatically defaults to those, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no doubt.
So that's a valuable thing to have. How much are you willing to pay for it? I think that's what Amazon was trying to figure out.
There's the minor thing that we'll also mention that was just kind of funny. It really should go in the nonsense section this week. Is there's this thing called Amazon ambassadors on social media. And, like, the tweets from those are hilarious because it's totally... Like, one of the tweets is like, oh, yeah, my bathroom breaks are completely reasonable. And it's like, is this something that somebody would normally tweet it's about?
So specific to the things that Amazon has been criticized for.
It's like, who would tweet about the bathroom break being completely reasonable.
It's so easy to get 500 picks per minute from the shelves. I'm so fulfilled.
It was also a union. There were some tweets about unionization, too, that was like, I don't know why I would want to pay union dues, dot, dot, dot.
Yeah, that's... I wonder what you get for that. What's the kickback for being one of those
MSU? Not fired. You get not fired. Probably.
You get one extra bathroom break.
Yeah.
So it's like you betray your coworkers just to pee. Apple. Now, we know that Apple is not too excited about right to repair. And they're very protective of all of their high-margin products. I can't imagine why. But we also know that, if you're a developer or whatever and you're working on apps or web pages or whatever, you need to either have every phone, which isn't realistic, right? Or you need to emulate.
Yeah.
Well, in the security world, they need perfect emulation because they need to test the security without having every device.
Xcode's emulation leaves a lot to be desired.
So some company was like, hey, we're going to give you perfect emulation for security research. And Apple says, I don't think so.
Apple seeks to shut down Corellium's perfect replicas of iOS. Company creates a virtual version of the iPhone, iPad, etc. This is pretty cool because it allows you to mess with boot parameters and security things and stuff like that. But Corellium, Apple, in Apple's criticism, they have said that Corellium encourages you not to report security issues that you might find to Apple, but instead to sell them on the open market, which Apple does not like.
Which is worth more.
Yeah, and I think that Apple's probably going to be able to shut it down just based on the whole, like, they're using our code, blah, blah, blah. But all of the other stuff in the lawsuit is just seems like Apple whining. Because it's like, oh, they're not encouraging users to report security issues to Apple. Therefore, it's not about security. And it's like, you guys have been impossible to deal with in terms of security issues for basically forever.
But in the longer term, you would think this benefits the user. Because as they go out into the open market, they will be revealed eventually, and then they should get fixed.
Yeah.
Might be a little more embarrassing that way, but ultimately, a better product, right?
Apple must avoid embarrassment at all cost. Yeah.
And also, I'm sure they want to get those sales, right? Hey, you want to be a security researcher? Buy every iPhone as it comes out, so you can be the first to find these things. Remember Tumblr? Tumblr, one of the best stories, I think, of the social media revolution. Because Tumblr was a very niche place to go and post a very specific type of content for a very edge personality, I would say. And then they made a very stupid decision, a knee-jerk decision, to ban some of that content that those people really liked. And cratered the value of their company.
Verizon to sell Tumblr to WordPress.com owner. So Verizon Communications has agreed to sell its blogging website Tumblr to the owner of the popular online blah, blah, blah. It's funnier than that, though, because Yahoo acquired Tumblr originally for $1 billion. And that was that Marissa Mayer? I believe that was Marissa Mayer.
I think so, yeah.
Under Yahoo.
And it was probably worth something around that at that time. Because it had... It didn't have all the traffic in the world, but it had a really rabid fan base.
Yeah. So ads. Also ads. Mm-hmm. And then Verizon acquired Yahoo for peanuts. And I wonder if Marissa Mayer is part of the equation. Pretty sure that Verizon sold Tumblr to WordPress.com for under $3 million.
Well, I can't remember what the catalyst was, but I mean, there was some outrage about adult content.
Yeah.
What started that?
Verizon.
Was it?
Yeah. They were like, no, we're not going to have this anymore.
But no, something happened to make them make that decision. I can't remember what it was. But anyway, they were like, no, we can't have this content. And it turned out a lot of the people, and then a lot of people, it seemed like it was female-oriented or female-created or LGBT-created adult content. And it wasn't something that you could just go somewhere else and find.
Mm.
So it was like this really specific thing that Tumblr had. And when you took that away and pissed all those people off...
There were other better blogging platforms.
It wasn't a great blogging platform. It was a great place for furry porn. Not a great place to blog.
In other news, WordPress is apparently profitable enough that they could afford to do this kind of shenanigans, which is disappointing because WordPress is hot garbage.
It is shockingly insecure.
Remains shockingly insecure after decades.
It is funny, though, because every client that comes to you is like, now, I've heard of WordPress. I think we should use WordPress.
WordPress is the Windows 3.1.
And then you hear that... the noise that Fred Flintstone made when he was peeling out with his feet as you leave the conference room. Spotify. Spotify is making an interesting venture. It says, let's look at some countries that have really high GDP and earnings and the people have a lot of money. What can we do there?
Spotify to test a more expensive version of its popular music service. Music companies complain that the discounts have cut into their revenue, so Spotify's going to raise prices in places that can afford it.
Basically a trial balloon to see if the people of Scandinavia can take the price increase, then the rest of the world should follow, right? So if you're Scandinavian, cancel your Spotify, please. Do it for the rest of us. Go back to pirating music.
I think between this and not allowing independent artists to just upload their music directly, I think this is the beginning of the end for Spotify.
Yeah, it does seem like they're doing they're following the YouTube pattern of destroy your creator's ability to create and then strangle all of your users from actually wanting to use your platform, which has a lot of competitors.
Well, it seems like the algorithm for YouTube and Spotify, I would say, is that like paralysis of choice. It's like that study where it's like you had a million flavors of ice cream to choose from. You were just paralyzed and you didn't want to make any. You got sort of a decision fatigue. But when you only had a choice of like two or three things, it's like, oh, yeah, I'll go with that. So the algorithm is probably just the long way around of rediscovering that. And so culturally, it would be a lot easier if you only had really three things to pick from to enjoy, like for movies or videos to watch or, you know, music clips or whatever. There's really only like a very limited choice, because then, you know, you don't have to think about it.
I don't know. The small engine repair videos I binged last night would disagree with that. Because why am I watching those? And yet I do, over and over. I do find that the ice cream thing, though, with now that the entire history of the music world is at my fingertips, I forget music that I listened to back in the day. And then sometimes I'll hear it out in the public somewhere and I'll be like, oh yeah, I should go online and add that to my music library. So it's interesting how that works. Microsoft has the Surface line, and they have a bit of a problem because they have this cool feature, but it doesn't work like it should.
ZDNet brings us to the story of Microsoft Surface Pro 6 and the Surface Book 2 devices are throttle locking to 400 megahertz. So
that's not very fast.
No. Software can tell the processor to throttle because it's too hot, but the processor will also throttle when it thinks it's too hot. So this is a software problem, and this started happening after a firmware update. And I picked up a Surface when they were first released by Microsoft. I thought it was a pretty revolutionary product. And I used a Surface Pro 3 and a Surface Book 2. And this is just, Microsoft has dropped the ball here. They're not doing the engineering the way that they should. And these issues should not happen on a product as mature as the Surface line.
So BD Proc Hot is what's happening. Like you say, it's not just the processor itself, but some peripherals can pass. It's like, hey, I'm hot. We should throttle. And it turns out there is a piece of software that you can get that will disable this. Now, this will not. There is still a thermal shutdown safety switch. So it's not like this is going to destroy your device. It might shut it down. But you can literally get a little piece of software that just disables this and fixes it. And yet, Microsoft, with all of its updates, has not.
No. And it's a self-inflicted problem. We just don't know exactly precisely how yet.
I've noticed that my Surface, the fan, runs far more often since I got cats.
Is that because of the cat hair?
I think so, yeah.
Might be time to get the air duster out.
Oh, VR. VR is, it's interesting because it's not like 3D TV did, but it hasn't taken off. It's sort of like just barely surviving, it seems like.
I think a zombie would be an accurate description.
I don't know. It might not be. I mean, it might still survive. It might take off.
Zombies can survive.
Well, I don't think they have any long-term survival. You think they could just reintegrate with society?
Eventually, yeah. Well, I Am Legend? That's what happened in I Am Legend, right?
In the book. But those were vampires. Those were not zombies. If you've seen the Will Smith vehicle, that's not how that story went. But anyway, you ask yourself, what is the killer app situation in which VR could be mass accepted? Maybe it's this.
I would not have guessed this. British Airways testing VR headsets for first-class passengers this year. In-flight headsets are the latest sign that VR is much more to offer than gaming. They were also saying that they had these VR headsets at like the kiosk terminals, like at check-in, to be like, hey, you want to upgrade to first class? Put on this helmet and we'll show you what first class is like, because it's a completely different world.
Strap this to your head, pleb, and give us your money.
I really think this would be a better choice for economy versus first class, because like first class is a pleasant experience without this. If you're on a 15-hour flight in like the very back of the plane in like the super economy seats, I think the VR headset would be great to remind you of how to escape the misery of that type of a flight experience.
But my problem with VR in this context is there's going to have to be a really good throwaway separation between me and the mask.
Right? Oh, yeah.
Because I'm not sharing a VR headset with hundreds of other humans every day. You talk about the Canadian flu. Yeah, just
we almost died.
Just strap this Petri dish to your face for this 5-hour flight. That'll be good, right? So I assume they'll come up with something, like a sock or something that you put on your head to prevent that. I also wonder about, and I know that, visually, I don't think that the inner ear thing, because you're in a pressurized cabin, it's not quite the same as a car. But will there be any mismatch in you're clearly moving in a way that your eyes are not moving? Is that going to be sickness?
That's probably going to be disorienting, because you can constantly feel the plane like moving and shifting slightly.
And then the vision, and you're watching something. Maybe you're playing a game. You're walking forward, and then the plane lurches, and that could be bad. But you could get like a vomit mask attachment for the VR helmet.
15 hours of wearing your vomit feed bag. It's just, by the end of it, it's just like, hose me off. I'm done.
They also talked about doing the 360-degree immersive films. But that would be very limiting when you're sitting in your seat, don't you think?
You couldn't look at something happening behind you.
And it would be weird because, some people aren't using VR and they're looking forward, and all of a sudden you're just peering back at them. It's like, what's that? What's that guy doing? Interesting, though. I don't know. I've heard of dentists using VR. I think that's a great idea.
Yeah.
That's again, it's kind of weird because it's like tooth particles and saliva's splashing against it. So again, you need a really good sock to put on there to protect it. But that's a great time to tune out of the world. We have. Have you used DoorDash or Uber Eats or anything like that yet? Mm. No, I haven't. I mean, I think we both live too far outside of the city to get that. But I do see that plastered on every restaurant now. Literally everybody's offering it. It
must be good for them to go through the trouble of actually saying, do this.
Yeah, I guess so. Well, they charge a little bit of the store itself charges a small fee.
Yeah.
Which is what are you doing differently? This is exactly the same as another drive-thru customer. You don't have to do anything special. So why are you charging me a fee? Anyway, it seems to be popular, and everybody's got their own version of it. And so now Domino's is betting on something different than the third-party gig economy.
Domino's launches e-bike delivery to compete with Uber Eats and DoorDash. So, yeah, Domino's is doing its own thing, but with e-bikes, because that's cheaper to operate than a car, and you can have a lot of them. And again, I think the same problem applies to us, is nobody's going to want to bring an e-bike to our house.
Can you imagine e-biking all the way out there from Domino's?
They would literally be run over. Yeah. Like the truckers would just run them down.
Oops. So Why e-bikes? Well, they, I think, was it Seattle or San Francisco? Someplace that has hills. They tried to do this without the electric-assisted bikes.
No.
And it almost killed the drivers. Because you can get 15 pizzas in those boxes.
Oh, wow.
And that's a lot of pizza.
It is a lot of pizza.
And you think you start putting drinks in there, you're adding liquid weight.
Yeah.
So the drivers are like, we can't do this. So these bikes will actually, you know, they got that electric motor. They'll even that out.
I don't know if this is true or not, but a pizza delivery driver I knew said that you really want thick crust for delivery because thin crust gets smushed up against the side of the box and just generally does not travel well. If you're traveling through roads that have a lot of curves, it moves around the boxes too much.
I can see that.
It seems like that problem would be much worse on bikes.
Especially when, like, if you start to lose control of the bike and you're trying to, you know,
you, like,
cut it back and forth to keep your momentum because it's heavy because it's got 15 pizzas in it. Yeah. Yeah, that could definitely be an issue. And also, like, what if the bike ditches over?
Oh, yeah, everything's just gone.
Are you going back to get more pizzas? No. You're just delivering them.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're going to get your box and, like, one
edge. All the cheese is going to be on one side.
One corner's just smashed. But, hey, I miss getting things delivered. That is one thing about my home that I regret.
Amazon, where's the same day delivery?
I need a drone to bring me a sandwich. We often talk about the dangers of crowdfunding. And of course, you know, we use Patreon, but you know what you're getting. And I don't think we've ever failed to deliver. It's just videos, folks. That's what you get. But some people make really, really crazy promises. And especially when it comes to technology, when you go on to crowdfunding, you can just be like, hey, here's a flying car that heals you from as you travel in it. And people are like, nobody really looks into it. They're like, yeah, sure, sure. Give them $200. That's what happened here.
Split screen from The Verge. The crowdfunding phone of the future was a multi-million dollar scam. But see, the crazy thing is that it's totally plausible, which makes it the worst kind of fraud.
There it is.
So, yeah.
So this was, one of these is a phone. I think it's this one. And that is modular. So that phone attaches onto this, which is a foldable keyboard and a second screen. And then this, I guess, is the trackpad. And all that folds up. Plus, there was some pieces where you could add more memory and processing power, I think, right? Yeah. So this was, and a lot of people have asked for that kind of thing for a very long time. It's like, hey, let me add more processing power as I need it and more portability as I don't.
This is not like, Samsung actually made a thing. They made a laptop dock thing for their phones around like the Galaxy 6 or 7. Yeah,
this is another version of this thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's the phone that plugs into the dock, and then you get the second screen.
But, like, the Galaxy 6 or 7, like, you dock with it, and then it gave you a laptop-style screen and keyboard and its own battery, and that was fine. Like, that was okay. It wasn't super popular because Android wasn't really ready for the prime time. But now, on a modern, like, the S9, S10, and the Note, you got DeX. And so you can dock your phone with a dock and get HDMI out and USB and more battery and crap like that. I think people actually would like that. Like if your phone had like a compute card and you just pop that out of your phone and into a tablet or out of the tablet and into a laptop, I think people would genuinely like that.
More promotional material. Some of the best pictures are down here.
But according to the article, the dude just straight up took the money and ran.
Yeah, and they were very active on, was it Kickstarter or Indiegogo? Can't remember which one it was.
Making fake product updates.
But they were putting out stuff like this constantly. And it looks these great promotional photos showing the thing that actually never existed at all.
Yeah. They could have gone to China and made this. This is not, like, it would have been fine.
I think, you know, they couldn't live the lifestyle they were living on that free money and do that. But now they got an insane amount more than, I think they only wanted like $10,000 to get started.
Yeah.
They ended up getting like $650,000.
Yeah.
And I think that probably, it's kind of like the lottery winners. You know, like people win the lottery and then it ruins their lives. I think that kind of happened here.
Yeah. But they could have, I mean, they could have doubled down and kept going and kept going and kept going. Look at the people that did the GPD laptops, those ultra portable tiny laptops. They did a thing like that. Like the first version only got like so much money. And now they're on like the sixth or seventh iteration of those super tiny laptops. And so they're Indiegogoing for like $1 million.
For $650,000, you could have just hired somebody in China just to take over the project.
Yeah.
And you could sit on the sidelines and make money.
Yeah. I mean, it would. If there's that much interest on the Indiegogo side, if you've got a commercial product ready for people to buy, you could make pretty good money. You're not going to become wealthy beyond the dreams of avarice, but you could earn a decent living.
Well, you could spin that into something else, because then once you got that under your belt, you could be like, I'm a product designer and I know how to do this stuff and go to work for whoever, you know.
Well, like the people that are doing the GPD super portable laptops, I don't think they're wealthy beyond the dreams of avarice, but they're making a pretty good living and probably having a lot of fun doing it.
And in this case, he could have done literally nothing.
Yeah.
Just sit back and get a check. Work somewhere else if you want. We don't have a lot of hardware news that's like new hardware stuff, but I thought this was interesting because this is one of those situations where it's like, yeah, they did it, but why did they do it? Is it even going to matter?
Samsung just made a 108 megapixel camera for phones. Now, 108 megapixel technically has an asterisk there. They're using software and different kinds of sensors to stitch together stuff. And so they're saying, okay, in most scenarios, this is going to translate into about a 27 megapixel image. But it's going to look good and work well in low light, because very, very small sensors tend to have a lot of CMOS noise in low light. So the innovation here is not like we're going to build a 108 megapixel sensor for phones. It is that camera technology is so far departing from like traditional DSLR technology, and it's becoming more and more about the software and filtering and different kinds of sensors working together to produce the final 27 megapixel image, that it's really insane.
But also, if you were really doing that many megapixels, the reason that you only see that on DSLR is because the lens suddenly makes a huge difference.
Yeah.
This isn't going to have that.
Yeah. Well, it does have a larger lens. It's like a 1 to 1.33 ratio, which is like the largest camera phone lens ever, but it's still tiny by traditional camera standards.
But are we, I don't know, do a lot of people buy phones based on the camera these days?
I think a lot of people are not buying cameras based on the camera being on their phone being good enough.
I suppose so. I mean, I guess the Instagram thoughts, that probably means a lot to them, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's funny because a lot of cameras will not do 4K 60 hertz, but like iPhones do a reasonable job if you've got a lot of light with 4K 60 hertz. So like buying like cameras like ours, you know, it's like $600 starting for something that can do 4K 60 and like $1,200 to $2,000 for something reasonable. And then like an iPhone can do an okay job with 4K 60. It's pretty crazy.
And that camera, what do you think Apple pays for that camera?
Like $100 maybe, yeah. Not even.
Switching to social media, now we sort of previewed this story before. It's funny because in the world of tracking people on social media, we have just come off of Cambridge Analytica and literally every other big tech company getting caught tracking people.
Cambridge Analytica is only the tip of the iceberg.
And every time that happens, the government is outraged. How dare you? How dare you track people on social media? That is unacceptable. And then you get this headline.
The FBI seeks to monitor Facebook and oversee mass social media data collection. So there's actually a contract out there for a commercial company to supply software to do this. The request for proposal implies that they only want to track information that people publicly put out there. But I think there's a wink, wink, nudge, nudge here that's like, hey, are you a commercial company with a relationship like Cambridge Analytica for, you know, inside Facebook and Google and other stuff? Could we use that relationship to like scrape data, please?
I bet Microsoft is pissed because they just lost that API access. It's like, we could have done that.
So I might be reading too much into that there, but that was the impression that I got reading this, was like, we only really want public data, but you know, if you've got a relationship with Facebook and there's public-ish data, we'd take that too.
Now, I don't know if Facebook has publicly said anything about this, but I think what has leaked out has been like, no. Because if you're Facebook, you have to know. Like, you know, the death of Facebook was when Grandma got on Facebook, right? What could be worse than Grandma being on Facebook? The feds. If the feds are on Facebook, of course you're not going to use it. So Facebook is definitely, they have a good reason to try and prevent this from happening, which is probably a good thing for us. Now, the other thing about Facebook, now there is the old, adage that Facebook is listening on our phones, right?
But why?
And a lot of people are like, that's not true. They would never do that. And some people are like, well, I was talking about X and I've never searched it and I've never had looked at it on Google and yet I'm getting ads about it.
And then that was like, no.
Couldn't happen. Yeah. So then you see this headline and it's like, where did this come from? What even is this?
Bloomberg has the article that Facebook paid contractors to transcribe users' audio chats. So the social network says it paused for human review of conversations. So it apparently did have people, contractors, I guess, reviewing conversations between two humans and transcribing them.
I guess this is through the communicator thing, right? You can just use that for voice.
Yeah.
I've never used it.
But that seems odd.
And why... why would that need to be transcribed? Like, what AI are you making better
by
transcribing that?
I would like to know where in the terms of service it says something in plain language, like, if you use the audio chat feature in Facebook, we might record that forever and or share that with third-party contractors to transcribe.
But it's the other question is, why would you need to transcribe it? What is that data set being used for, ultimately?
They probably should disclose that, huh?
I can't imagine what... it's got to be an AI, right? But what AI... so is that an AI that's going to be listening all the time to try and infer things from conversations?
Well, you could use the data set for two different things if it was an AI. One would be to train the AI to recognize it, so you need less human beings to do it in the first... in the second place.
But that's just circular. Like, still for the sake of nothing.
Well, assuming that you got it working, then it would be for... like, what else would you use it for other than ad targeting? Other than, like, the thing that you were complaining about, like, being paranoia and or hysteria, like, that would be the perfect thing to use that technology for. If you just had an AI that was listening and transcribing all the time, then when it heard, you know, Jeep or Nike or Barbie Dreamhouse, it would immediately be like, yes, I must show you those products.
So this did not come from Facebook originally. It came from, disgruntled people who were like, this is a horrible job and these people are talking about terrible things and I have to type it out. But then Facebook did say, oh, we've paused that, which means yes, we did that. We definitely did that thing. That thing that we've been denying for a long time. Yeah, we did that.
Oh, speaking of other things that are really bad that they're up to.
Yeah, so when you work for Facebook, now this is not the transcribers, although the transcribers could run into this as well.
Yeah.
You don't know what people are talking about, but we mentioned, like, there was the guy who was killing lizards and posting videos. There's the mass shooter that was on Facebook.
We've had several stories about the Facebook moderators because, like, normal people will have empathetic, strongly negative empathetic reactions to people doing terrible things on the internet.
Right. And there was that, like, the hate crime one where they set fire to a person with mental disability. And it's just like the darkest stuff, sexual abuse. And when you're one of these moderators, you're only seeing stuff that's been flagged as this.
Yeah.
And they mentioned, like, what was it, like 800 videos a day?
Yeah, it's really hard if you're a human being.
So you're watching 800 horrific, terrible, terrible videos a day. So one of the perks you get for that is you get a counselor on staff. If it gets to be too much, you need to talk to somebody. You go, you lay on the couch, and you try to get it out.
And we've covered that before in several stories.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
That's a good thing to
have.
We've
got a follow-up.
But the problem is, when you're Facebook, it's not enough just to offer the counselor. No. Then you have to try to mine that data. You have to try to mine the counselors.
Trauma counselors were pressured to divulge confidential information about Facebook moderators, internal letters claim. So, yeah, Facebook had counselors, but it's like, man, this person cannot handle seeing these terrible videos of animals dying in horrific ways. We got to fire him.
I suppose that they're probably trying to head off some sort of, workers' compensation type claim.
Yeah.
Where it's like, yeah, my mental health was shattered.
Well, I mean, if you get a repetitive injury thing for, you know, constantly lifting something over 80 pounds and that's covered under workers' comp, watching too many disturbing videos and, you know, having to take a few years off for your mental health, that seems reasonable.
Having to watch more than 80 lizards killed per day is the same as lifting bags of concrete.
It's like electron orbitals. It's a finite and discrete amount of energy, and it's like if it's 79 lizards, it's fine. But the 80th lizard will, you know, alter your mental state.
This was, as often with these companies, this was layered under some third parties. Yeah. So it's not Facebook that's doing it. It's the company that Facebook's hiring to do the moderation. And then they hired the mental health people. Now, the reason we know about this is some of these therapists, they had a special name for them. Do you remember what it was? It was like something really stupid. But some of these therapists had some, you know, wellness coach. That's what it was. They had the, you know, professionalism to be like, no, this is completely unacceptable. That everything that we say in that room is confidential. I will not give it to you. And the company just kept coming back. And it's like, you got to tell us, you got to tell us. And then they quit and they blew the whistle on it. So
I wonder if we'll ever see a situation where like the job description for this is like, we are only looking for people that are completely incapable of emotion.
You know where they can find that? The U.S. Senate. We talked about YouTube and the adpocalypse and all the copyright stuff, and it's such a horrible, horrible dumpster fire. But maybe a baby step in the right direction this week.
YouTube shuts down music companies' use of manual copyright claims to steal creator revenue. So it turns out that things had been getting kind of egregious for a while. And so if you're a creator and you're making content outside and somebody, you know, in a car drives by in the background and you can hear three beats of a song, then it's like, oh, copyright. It's so obtuse that even the algorithm is not flagging it. So if somebody flags it manually, YouTube is saying whoever's flagging it can no longer take the revenue. You can only just block the video. And YouTube's hoping that will make the copyright claimant just not do that, because there's not a financial incentive for them to overzealously claim content.
I guess. I think it's much the opposite now, because if, let's say, you know, you're out in public and you're in a food court and you're doing a vlog in the food court and you can hear, you know, Taylor Swift, that's actually exposure for Taylor Swift, right? So if you can't steal money, there's really no motivation to destroy it. So it makes sense to just leave it, right?
You would think, but
we'll see how that plays out. Now, YouTube has said in the short term, yeah, there are probably going to be some deleted videos because of this, and we understand that. But we think in the long term, it's going to smooth out and be a better situation for everybody.
Footnote, this comes on the heels of Nintendo claiming every single instance of any kind of Nintendo video game music anywhere on YouTube. Like, they just loaded up the catalog of literally any chiptunes thing that there has ever been in Nintendo and claimed literally everything.
So, won't be able to do that anymore.
Thanks, Nintendo.
There is a trick. If you know that your video is going to get, you're going to violate one of those things, you don't want those people to get the money, you can add a well-known one that will also get flagged. If two argue about it, nobody gets it.
Nice.
And also in the YouTube world, there is some calls for discrimination. Now, I will say to these people, they're doing this to everybody. You're not special.
YouTube, this is from the BBC. It's like, LGBT video makers sue claiming discrimination. So these creators are creating content, and if the content has even like the wrong word in the title, they're demonetized and they can't get a human being to review it. Yeah, that does sound pretty familiar.
Yeah. I mean, we're not... you can see how it might be controversial now. Some of these were just... these people just happened to be gay. And it wasn't necessarily that the channel was about being gay or whatever, LGBT. One of them, though, was videos about sexual health. So you can imagine that if advertisers are so scared that they don't want their ads on something that says the word Trump or shooting, then yeah, sex is going to be completely off limits. And gay sex, forget about it. So probably some truth to it, but it's also true these news stories trigger it very often. Very often. So I wonder if the small engine repair guys suffer from that. All right, Wendell, if we took your phone away, how far would you go to get back on Twitter?
I could probably tweet from a payphone.
Well, one teenage girl claims to have done something very novel to get to her Twitter followers. However, a researcher with apparently absolutely nothing else in the world to do has disputed it.
Teen claims to tweet from her smart fridge, but did she really? So this all started because somebody randomly posted on Twitter. It's like, oh, I've been grounded. My mom took away my phone and all my stuff, but I can still tweet from the fridge.
Did you see why she said she got her stuff taken away?
She set a fire in the kitchen accidentally.
She was cooking while she was staring at her phone and set the house on fire. Does that sound familiar?
A little bit.
So, smart fridges. You can get a web browser.
Yeah.
It makes perfect sense. You could do this.
She was definitely tweeting from a Nintendo Switch or a Wii U or something.
It was a Switch, yeah.
So,
but here's the thing about it. When you tweet from one of these devices, and we've all seen that, like it's when you tweet, there was that famous story where the iOS product manager.
Like, I love this new iPhone from Android.
From Android. So devices can have the embedded thing in there from the, with the app that'll tell you what kind of device is being used. Now, her tweet said, from my LG smart fridge. But here's the thing. The LG smart fridge doesn't run the Twitter app. It would run a web browser. So it might be that this young lady was fabricating the fridge tweet just to get attention.
Well, it worked.
It did work. Now, they said they've been in contact with her. This was The Guardian. And up until a certain point, she was like, oh, yeah, that's me. And she told them the story about setting the fire and stuff. And then they started sending her the info from this researcher, and she just cut off all communication. She's gone into hiding. But could be that she's been banned from the fridge.
Yeah. I don't want a fridge with Android. Like, that's to me like the Navy ship with the touch screen. Like, this is not... Like, I am a technology enthusiast to the nth degree, and I do not want that kind of technology there.
But it also
makes no sense.
It goes to show you, I mean, you don't have this problem, but, like, as a parent, would you even think of that?
No.
I mean, you're trying to get your kid away from technology for a reason, and the fridge is there.
Yeah.
I mean, you got to give them access to the fridge, right?
I mean, what would you do? Would you tape like a plastic bag over the screen? Is that what you would do?
You'd have to take the entire door apart to disconnect that, right?
Well, no, I would just like put cardboard over it or something so that you can't see it.
But if you're not home.
Oh, then you could, yeah.
That's not going to keep anybody out.
Well, okay, so you'd have to tape it, and then you'd have to use that that like a glitter nail polish, and then take a picture of it with your phone so that if they broke the seal, it would be a different glitter pattern.
You do the trick where you pull out one of your hairs and you tape it on both sides, you know, and so when you come home and the hair is broken, you know, they can't replace it because it's your hair.
What do we got going on Friday? Nonsense, of course.
Nonsense and robots.
Those always go together well.
It was a big week for robots. It's not always the case, but we'll see you then.